We'll move on to our next agenda item, which is a motion for rehearing on 2007-2008 number 37 concerning the repeal of the Colorado Water Resources and Power Development Authority. The time is 3:53 p.m. And I'd first like to hear from representatives of the motion for rehearing. I think Mary Hammond, if you would come forward, identify yourself for the record and who you represent, please.
My name is Mary Hammond, and I'm representing the petitioner, Dan Law. We filed a petition for rehearing, and I guess I'd like to address initially, and probably as the main portion of my remarks, we believe that the initiative and the title are invalid because the initiative addresses more than a single subject. And I think that to consider this matter sort of in context, I'd like to sort of remind us all of a few principles of single subject analysis gleaned from Colorado Supreme Court decisions, and I'll just sort of quote them. And the first is from the 2006 decision regarding the ballot title and submission number 2005-655, in which the Supreme Court said, an initiative may be offered as a single subject by stating the subject in broad terms. If an initiative states vague terms, then it may appear to present a single subject. But when the details necessary to understand the subject are considered, the initiative may involve separate subjects. To avoid subjective decision making in this arena, we have developed an analysis to determine whether an initiative contains unrelated subjects contained within an overarching theme. And our case law requires us to examine an initiative to determine its purposes and whether they are related to the central theme of an initiative. Substantively, the Supreme Court has made clear that the single subject requirement prohibits a single legislative act from addressing disconnected and incongruous measures that have no necessary or proper connection. And they've observed that this limitation serves to ensure that each legislative proposal depends upon its own merits for passage and protects against fraud and surprise occasioned by the inadvertent passage of a surreptitious provision coiled up in the folds of a complex bill. More specifically, an initiative violates the single subject requirement when it, one, relates to more than one subject, and two, has at least two distinct and separate purposes that are not dependent upon or connected with each other. In this connection, an initiative may not hide purposes unrelated to the initiative's central theme. And I think that's where we have a difficulty with this particular initiative, in that the stated central subject is fairly simple, quite broad, the authorization of the Colorado Water Resources and Power Development Authority. But when you examine it, as examine it you must, you determine that there are a number of unrelated, disconnected, and incongruous purposes that are included in it. First of all, the statute, in order to have the authority deauthorized as is required by July 1st, 2009, and by certification by the state treasurer that the existing debts of the authority have been paid, requires, as the proponents have indicated, and as their colloquy when the title setting was held initially makes clear, that the state legislature is obligated under this initiative to take some action to address the existing bonded indebtedness of the authority. That bonded indebtedness of the authority is not debt of the state of Colorado. And so requiring the state legislature to take action to address that bonded indebtedness in order for the state treasurer to be in a position to certify, as required by the initiative, that the debts have been addressed or no longer extant, requires the state legislature to take action that it goes well beyond simply deauthorizing the authority and requires the state to take affirmative action with respect to, presumably, taking on as debt of the state, which it is not now, or otherwise defeasing providing for the payment of existing bonded obligations of the authority, which amount to something on the order of $1.1 billion at the current time. That's one purpose that is coiled up in the measure. In addition, the initiative calls for the legislature somehow to effect what is called a Type 3 transfer of the powers and assets of the authority to some undesignated state department or agency. The problem, of course, is that Type 3 transfers under the statute don't provide for and don't provide a means for making such a transfer. And I guess I would just sort of note here, we received earlier this afternoon when we came in the response of the proponents to the to our petition for rehearing. We have not carefully examined it, but I would just note one matter on this. On page 4 of their response, in the first full paragraph there, the proponents state that 7C stipulates that after dissolution of the authority as an effect of 7A, the effects of the former authority are then transferred to a department via usual manners of state transfer of effects of a dissolved entity or agency. The problem is there are no usual manners of transfers of effect of a state political subdivision. That's what we're dealing with here, is a state political subdivision. It's not an agency. And there aren't any usual manners out there for the transfer of the effects of a state political subdivision to a designated department or agency of the state. That means that in order to accomplish what the initiative directs happens, the state legislature has to either amend the statute that it, to which it is referred, or it has to ignore the direction of the initiative and somehow make it up on the fly as it goes. That seems to me to be a purpose that is significantly beyond the single subject of deauthorizing the authority. Finally, we talked a little bit about this in our petition for rehearing, is that the initiative makes no provision for, but ultimately requires changes to the state, the methodology that the state uses to secure significant federal funding that is provided to these two state revolving funds that are, by statute, the province and the administered, held, and operated by the authority. The authority provides the 20% state match that is required to come up with those federal capitalization grant funds, and the initiative, by deauthorizing the authority, leaves a complete blank as to how that is going to happen, and so the ultimate result is that presumably there is no source for making those state match payments, and the result is that the federal grants will not be available, and the ultimate result of that is there will be significant changes, significant diminution in programs and funds available for financing of Water Pollution Control and Safe Drinking Water Act infrastructure and programs within the state of Colorado. So overall, I guess what I would say is that the language of this initiative, the initiative itself, hides and please understand, I'm not ascribing any ill intent or surreptitious intent or intent to try to pull the wool over anybody's eyes to the proponents. But I think that fundamentally there is a problem that the proponents did not understand what the authority does. And ultimately what happens is the initiative hides a purpose to alter, significantly alter, the financing mechanisms that are out there, that are provided by the authority and that are provided by the authority uniquely because of the way the authority is established, and that can't be provided if the authority is deauthorized and simply transferred, as the initiative requires, to another state department or agency, and certainly will alter, significantly alter, the financial the financing of water-related infrastructure for governmental agencies throughout the state of Colorado. And I guess to sort of sum it up, what the Supreme Court said in the proposed initiative in 97, 98, 84, and 85 was that voters would be surprised to learn that by voting for local tax cuts, they also had required the reduction and possible eventual elimination of state programs. I think the same could be said here. I think voters would be very surprised to learn that by voting for deauthorization of the authority and the mechanisms for transferring it to the State Department as the initiative directs, and that might also be a separate subject, they also had required the reduction and possible eventual elimination of federal funding that is currently available and of financing programs and mechanisms that are currently available within the state and that provide significant funding for water-related infrastructure in the state. So I think that's the problem. It's not a single subject because there are so many other purposes coiled up in it, perhaps necessarily. The Supreme Court observed a number of years ago that the Tabor Amendment does not contain a single subject. Of course, was adopted prior to the time when the single subject was a requirement for initiatives. The Supreme Court, one could observe that an initiative that was stated to be repeal of the Tabor Amendment sounds like a single subject. But because the Tabor Amendment itself incorporates so many different subjects, it cannot be a single subject simply to say we want to repeal the Tabor Amendment. And I think similarly in this circumstance, saying we simply want to deauthorize and essentially abolish the authority sounds like a single subject. But because the authority by statute does so many different things and has so many different statutory responsibilities and aspects, it is in fact more than a single subject to try to deauthorize the authority. Any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer.
Thank you, Ms. Hammond. Are there questions from the board?
I think you answered the question I was going to ask, which was everything you've said I think would also apply essentially if someone came in and just said we want to deauthorize the authority, and that was the entire measure, period. We hereby deauthorize the authority established, right? And so then the question really is that itself more than one subject?
And I guess my response would be, just as Tabor, deauthorizing Tabor is more than one single subject, so would deauthorizing the authority be more than one single subject.
Okay.
Well, let me discuss with you several elements of your argument, I think, and let me start with that last one, because I think that's intriguing. I'm in thinking about that, I think the similarity between deauthorizing the authority and repealing Tabor is that just as Tabor contains multiple subjects and therefore repealing it would raise multiple subjects, I think you're saying that deauthorizing the authority, because it does multiple things, is a good analogy, that therefore it must be multiple subjects, that all you could do, just like you can only repeal parts of Tabor in any single initiative or referred measure, likewise you could only deauthorize separate functions of the authority. Is that correct?
I think that would be yes, that's the analogy, and I think that's my contention.
And I'm wondering if it matters that, well, and this is partly a question, Tabor was proposed before there was a single subject amendment applicable to initiatives, so it preceded the single subject requirement. So even though it's multiple subjects, according to the Supreme Court, so that's how it was enacted.
That's exactly right.
I'm not so sure about the authority. If it was initially created with these different functions in a single bill, now I'm reasonably certain over the years there's been amendments, maybe some additions and subtractions and so forth, but if it had multiple functions when it was initially created by a bill, that bill was subject to the single subject requirement that's been in the Constitution forever with respect to bills. So shouldn't, I mean, I guess if in fact it was created piecemeal, that's going to undermine what I'm suggesting to you.
Many of the functions, in fact, were these, the provisions for the authority to be the administrator and hold the Water Pollution Control Revolving Fund was added subsequently. The provision for the authority to provide and to hold the Safe Drinking Water Revolving Fund was added separately. A number of the financing mechanisms of the authority have been, in fact, many of the, most of the, I don't know if I'd say most, but many of the financing mechanisms of the authority were added separately in separate legislation over the years. Yes, in fact, that's sort of how it happened.
Well, and maybe I might be making too much of this because I'm not sure what it proves anyway, but I guess it would be helpful to know whether of the separate subjects that you identify that are inherent in the duties and responsibilities of the authority, if they were all created by separate bill. I mean, in theory,
the general financing capability of, you know, for water-related infrastructure was created in, I think, two separate bills for specific projects, for specific types of bonding capability. The Water Pollution Control Revolving Fund function was created in a separate bill. The Safe Drinking Water Act function was created in a separate bill. That's three separate bills for those three general bonding functions that the authority carries out. Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering if there is something, I mean, with respect to the authority, mm-hmm. It seems like, and I'm trying to think of this, of the different functions that you've identified, whether there really is kind of a common, a connection between those that kind of sort of makes common sense why the authority is, I mean, could it have all been done in one bill? Because you know, water projects, they're all related to water projects somehow, and therefore they all could have been done in a single bill. Whereas I think Tabor could not have been done because, for example, the section that deals with state mandates is really hard to relate to taxpayer bill of rights, I think. It seems like Tabor would have a more uphill battle if it were subjected to single subject requirements than most of what I think I remember you identifying as the functions of the authority.
Well, I guess what I would say to that is, if you were to articulate the overarching purpose as concerning altering financing mechanisms for water-related infrastructure in the state, you might be able to come up with a single subject topic that would encompass those things. But that's not what the proposal has been, and I don't think that's what the initiative is about. I mean, that is a purpose of the initiative, but it's not the stated purpose of the initiative, and it's not the central theme of the initiative. The central theme of the initiative is to deauthorize the authority.
Well, just to tie up that inquiry on my part, I think for your argument to succeed with me, I would have to conclude that the existing powers and duties of the authority could not be created in a single bill because they
and
would
I,
be multiple subjects.
I have not thought about that issue. I think it's very possible that they could not. I mean, certainly there are other things beyond bonding that the authority does do, feasibility studies of projects, that kind of thing, and I think that probably at this juncture it would probably be pretty tough to come up with a single subject bill that would cover all of the functions, mm-hmm. delineate all of the functions of the authority. You know, I suppose you could call it concerning the Water Resources and Power Development Authority. To the extent that's a single subject, that would be the case. But in terms of encapsulating all of the functions of the authority that are out there. I don't know that you could. And in fact, the functions of the authority were not adopted and created in a single bill.
Okay. Well, for the sake of helping me understand the arguments, let me carry this discussion a little from a different point of view. I mean, when I step back and look at the measure, it does seem to me, and you've already correctly noted this, I guess, is that it seems to me this really is a simple single subject. It's simply the authorizing the authority. Okay. Now, everything else that flows from that is the ramifications of that, the consequences, the effects, and I'm trying to I'm struggling with just trying to decide, you know, kind of what are they and how do I characterize them? Are they separate subjects, or are they simply effects? On the one hand, because effects, you know, we have some case law that says that, you know, multiple effects is not the equivalent of multiple subjects. It's clear that these aren't details. These are not, you know,
mere details
or minor issues. There are extremely significant consequences to simply deauthorizing the authority. And I see them right now as consequences or effects. I'm not sure that I see them necessarily yet as separate subjects or as hidden purposes. To me, it's possible the proponents are aware of the consequences, and that is their purpose is to deauthorize the authority, and they're aware of the consequences. To some degree, they have dealt with them by leaving it to the General Assembly to implement the measure through legislation, and that involves major legislation, because again, these are major questions about the measure that are left to the implementing legislation. But again, that would not, it doesn't yet, in my mind, rise to the level of a single subject violation. The fact that there are major things left for the legislature to do as far as implementing an initiative, you know, in the form that it is, and let me let the sort of discussion spill over into what I think is a related thing. I think the measure is inartfully drafted, and I think your arguments touch upon that. The measure could be a lot clearer or complete in dealing with the kinds of things that you've discussed in your motion for rehearing. And an example of what I would call inartful drafting, I think you've correctly noted that, you know, 24-1-105 is not really a section in its current form that fits very well, because it's about state agencies, and the authority is not a state agency. So the measure makes an awkward connection to that statute as it currently exists, but that what I would characterize as inartful drafting does not, again, summon in my mind a single subject violation. It means the General Assembly has a bigger challenge than they otherwise would have as far as how they figure out how to implement the measure. They could amend 24-1-105 to make it work. And they wouldn't be going beyond the fact that they do that, as long as they confine themselves. Well, even if they don't confine themselves to simply amending that statute to make this initiative work, they have the power to go on in a bill and amend 24-1-105 for the purposes of implementing this measure and for other purposes as well, I think, if it was simply a bill about 24-1-105. Now, that wouldn't take care of the implementation requirements of the rest of this measure. So I'm guessing in the implementing legislation that I picture, it's a major piece of legislation, because there's lots of things that are not settled by the language of this measure. And 24-1-105 was one they'd have to deal with. But they couldn't go beyond that and still comply with the single subject requirement for bills. So back to rambling like I was in the preceding agenda item, I none of that, though, gets me to a single subject violation. The fact that there's inartful drafting and the General Assembly has to do a lot of figuring out, and third, that there are major consequences that the voters are not told about in the measure itself. They're not expressly spelled out in the measure itself, nor in the titles, because those are consequences that we usually don't. That would become part of the debate about the measure, I think, if it were on the ballot. So in any event, your response, if you would.
My response is that the Supreme Court held that if a voter votes on, you know, in the 1997-1998 initiative, tax cuts and elimination of state programs. The elimination of state programs was a result, was an effect of voting for tax cuts. Yet the Supreme Court said voters would be surprised to know that, and that constitutes a single subject violation because it is so far beyond what they thought they were voting on. I mean, remember, one of the purposes of single subject is to make sure that the voters know what they're voting upon. And I think what the Supreme Court said in that case is, even if it is simply a consequence and an effect that could be foretold and could be discussed and could be a matter of discussion in the petition process and in the voting process and in the election process on the title, what the Supreme Court said is, if there is such a big effect that is, you know, I mean, clearly what they held in that case is, if the voters would be surprised to know that what they were doing was resulting in elimination of state programs, even though that was clearly an effect of the stated title of the initiative, stated single subject of the initiative, tax cuts, that was a violation of single subject. So that would be my response. Yes, I understand your notion that, okay, the single subject is deauthorization of the authority. There may be significant effects on that. There may be significant burdens upon the state legislature to make it happen. But would the voters be surprised to know, when they're voting on something, the title of which is deauthorization of the authority, that they are either requiring the state to make significant amendments in other statutes, or requiring the states to completely change how water resources, water-related infrastructure will be financed, or take on $1.1 billion in debt that they don't currently have? So that would be my response is, yes, there are effects, but what the Supreme Court said is, hey, if there are such big effects and they're so sort of, I don't know whether they would say they're unconnected, but they're connected, they're effects. But if they'd be surprised to learn that that's what they're doing when the supposed title is, and the supposed subject is simply deauthorization of the authority, then that's a violation of single subject.
Well, and thank you for focusing on that, because frankly, that's the most, I think that's the best argument, and I think that's the most troublesome case or line of cases to fit into the overall jurisprudence. I really do struggle with that, because here on the one hand we have, you know, I think your characterization is accurate, and yet there are other cases that say, if consequences and effects are not a separate subject, and it's, I've struggled with that, trying to understand how tax cuts did not imply to the voters cuts in state programs. I don't know how to, frankly, I've not yet come up with a good way to apply that case to all cases, given that we also have case law that seems to say the opposite. I'm just be real blunt on the record, but I do think that's a good argument.
That's an argument that the Supreme Court has adopted. That's the argument that the Supreme Court has relied on, and of course, you know, most recently in 2006, they quoted that language and affirmed that language and relied upon that as the basis for finding a violation of single subject on that on the 2006 number 55, whatever it was, the services to immigrants provision. And I think that we got to take that seriously. I do take that seriously.
And I do take it seriously. But let me read a quote from another case. Quote:
sure.
"We have never held that just because a proposal may have different effects, or that it makes policy choices that are not inevitably interconnected, that it necessarily violates the single subject requirement." This is a 2000 case, 1999, 2002, 56, 12 P. 3rd, 246. I mean, and I think there's other cases like that, you know, which seem to say exactly the opposite, unless I'm just missing the obvious.
Well, I think that one of the things that the Supreme Court focused on in the 2006 case was they said, is the purpose both hidden and unrelated to the central theme? Central theme is deauthorizing the authority, financing of water resources infrastructure effects, and the requirement to change another statute seems to me unrelated to that central theme. And I think that that may be part of it, is that it's an effect that is unrelated and of course would be surprising to a voter.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Is there any other questions for Ms. Hammond? Okay, thank you. Mr. Hamilton, if we could hear from you on your response to the motion for rehearing.
Sure. And Mr. Phil Doe, also co-sponsor, will be available for comments should that be required. The two things seem to be of concern for you all, and I think that they can be dealt with rather rapidly. On the response, I made part of the record of my response to the motion to rehear the title set by the Colorado County Zoning Board Authority for initiative to statutorily modify the 3795-101 second statutes. I made that a part of the record. I gave there's part of your packet. There's one for the absent Maury down there, etc. The two things. I believe that there's a pretty clear instruction. Most of what learned counsel has suggested to you all is that there will be effects. And the assertion by the petitioner that the initiative contains another hidden purpose regarding financing and water-related projects in the state is an argument on the merits of the measure. This Colorado court found in RE proposed initiatives 2001, 2002, 21, and 22. At 44 P3D 213, the court announced that it would not address the merits of a proposed initiative, interpret it, or construe future legal effects. And it also goes ahead further in proposed initiative 43 and 46 P3D 438, Colorado 2002. What that means is that there may well be certain kinds of arguments. For instance, it may be within the desirability of people developing water resource projects that they would sue to overturn the vote in referendum A because the public did not understand that they were going to be curtailing the possibilities of various water resource development projects. Now, referendum A doesn't have anything to do with this, but it has to do with we sit here as an authority created in statute, and by the way, if somebody wishes to go ahead and propose that the authority be deauthorized, that does not mean that the programs that the authority administers and has a review over is going to be, this is, as Phil says, this isn't a Luddite proposal. We're not going to, we just want to think, we think that the Water Resources and Power Development Authority is anachronistic in the sense that, and it needs to go. The very interesting thing is that in the current 3795-104.7 statutes, 7A reads, or used to read, may I read the older statute, the authority may be dissolved by the General Assembly on the condition that the authority has no debts or obligations outstanding and provision has been made for the payment or retirement of such debts or obligations upon any such dilution of the authority. All property funds and assets thereof shall be vested in the state. Now, we did not take that out. As a matter of fact, we left that in. So if 7A dissolves the authority, if this measure were to pass at the public vote, it would say, essentially, that all the materials and all the programs and all the assets and all the wherewithal of the former authority would be vested in the state. And it, whatever badinage you had about unartful drafting, I think 104, 105, at 24-1, st- state transfers of state property to state department and agencies is always done by Type 3 transfers. Do you know of any other manner in which they're done? I don't. I've only been a lobbyist for 32 years at the state legislature, but maybe I've missed something in all of that. So we have something that's called a central theme. There's no central theme. There is solely a single subject. That is the dissolution of the authority. There's only one purpose. I think that the title that is set fairly and accurately and clearly goes ahead and establishes the intent of the sponsors. I think it goes ahead and also provides very cogent, very real, very clear, very clean, very direct presentation to the public that there is a statute in 3795-101 SEC that creates an authority, which most of the citizens of the state of Colorado would be surprised to know about. they're talking about surprises. We just think it needs to go.
Mr. Campbell, let me ask you a question or two. I mean, I'm not too concerned about 24-1-105. To me, there's administrative details with the wind-up of any agency or whatever. But I'm not so concerned with administrative details in that respect. I am potentially concerned about what I refer to as the big ramifications of deauthorizing the authority. I mean, here we have a simple little measure that merely deauthorizes an agency. But what's really happening here is what's not stated for the most part in the measure at all. There's huge ramifications of this. Now I'm sort of arguing the other side. It's not mere details in the details. This is huge policy things that happen that aren't stated in clearly stated at least in the measure, and nor in the titles. What major substantive consequences are going to flow from merely deauthorizing the authority?
Mr. Hobbs, you will remember that we brought a fully harmonized statute to this board after a thorough review and comment on the 140 hearings at Legislative Council, Legislative Legal Services, and this board turned that down as being too complex. They didn't understand the ramifications. So now we are coming around to the whole thing again that says, in fact, if you don't explain them, you have, in fact, not provided all the ramifications. So my answer to all of that is, where the original language of the statute said the authority may be dissolved by the General Assembly. Now, the first right that the people have retained Section 1, Article 5 of the state constitution is the right to legislate. Is there difference between what this General Assembly can do in its enunciated purposes and what this board will allow the public to do in an initiated process? I hope not.
I think Ms. Hammond is suggesting the General Assembly could not simply repeal the authority in its entirety either.
Oh, I think it could.
Well, I'm just saying, she's saying like Tabor, it has multiple purposes. It's grown up now that in its current form has multiple purposes.
Tabor has in its problem that it addresses multiple fields. This addresses the dissolution of the authority. It does not dissolve any program at all. You will find in the Clean Water, Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Water Act, that almost every state in the union gets funds. Now, does every state in the union have an analogous Colorado Water Resource Development Authority that is set up to go ahead? Is that in statute somewhere that I'm unaware of? And I don't think so. I think that the states have statutorily, legislatively created programmatic areas. You're suggesting that the state can't change its.
I think Ms. Hammond's suggesting is you could if you didn't have an authority right now, you could enact legislation to create it, but it'd take multiple bills. And likewise, you can't repeal it without multiple bills. You could get rid of just that, for example.
We're not getting rid of the Safe Drinking Water Act program. We're not getting rid of anything. We're, in fact, getting rid of the authority.
And the
authority is proposed to be deauthorized. Now, this is, in fact, initiated legislation. This is not constitutional modification. So what happens, the legislature can act on anything. And, by the way, it also says in there that no debts or outstanding obligations or provisions that have been made for the payment or retirement of such debts. Ms. Hammond is accused over that there are going to be $1.1 billion that are going to be foisted upon the state. As a state act, I don't think so. I think the referendum didn't pass. $2 billion worth of undirected revenue bonds, etc. We have a very simple subject. We have a very, very simple initiative. And I think that go ahead, Phil. This is Mr. Phil Doe.
I need you to sign up, too, if you would, please. But go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
I'd just like to reemphasize something I said earlier on, and that is that there's a very simple subject here. We want to deauthorize the authority. There are many impacts that will flow from this. And I think the public, if democracy works at all, should have a right to look at and see what this authority does and make its own judgment about whether this wants its organization to continue or not. And I think the legislature might be surprised at some of the things it might learn about the authority and its powers. And that's all we're asking, is give the public a chance to judge for itself whether, in fact, it wants this organization to continue or not. That's what we're asking. Now, I find offensive a little bit the characterization of the impacts that would happen if the authority is deauthorized. I think that it's all fear-mongering. It's accusing us of being Luddites. That is not our purpose at all. We want some transparency to government, and we don't think the authority fits that model at all.
Well, and I don't want to get into the merits I think the right of the people to have that issue presented to them is subject to the limitation that the Constitution requires every measure comprise a single subject. That's what this discussion is about. Is it a single subject? And that's what I want the discussion to be about. That's what we're
and
trying
there,
to figure
there
out.
And there will be many impacts. We can agree to that.
Okay. Could you add your name to the sign-up sheet?
Sure, of course. I'm sorry.
Ms. Hammond, did you want to respond to the arguments of the proponents?
Mr. Hamilton and Mr. Doe have been very clear, and Mr. Hamilton has repeated several times, that no programs of the authority would be changed. And, for example, that under the Clean Water Act, there are these state revolving funds. The fact of the matter is that every state revolving fund that exists pursuant to legislation that creates that program and that provides for that program to be done. If the legislation, the authority, is gone, then that program that is run by the authority is gone. And I guess the other point is, I think that there is a fundamental misconception here about the nature of the programs of the authority. Mr. Hamilton insists we're simply going to transfer all of these programs of the authority to a state agency. And the problem is that you can't do that because a state agency cannot do the programs that the authority can do. A state agency, in the first place, it can't issue revenue bonds at all unless authorized to do so by the legislature. And in the second place, if it issues revenue bonds, they are revenue bonds of the state. They are not revenue bonds not of the state, which is what the revenue bonds that the authority issues are. And that's one of the central features of the authority's program, is that the bond obligations that they issue and the financing that they secure is not state financing. So one can insist that, no, we're not trying to undo the programs, and we're not trying to change financing. We're not trying to be Luddites, as it were. But the effect of what they're doing is that if you do deauthorize the authority, as they propose, you will, in fact, have that effect. And I believe that that is beyond a single subject.
Can I just ask, I think it's a question that relates to both of your points. if the authority goes away, those revolving funds, they would go away as long as the legislature doesn't create some new entity to administer them, right? I mean, there's nothing in the federal statute that requires it to be in this kind of separate authority. It could be, the legislature could resolve that, and they could resolve, they could, the only problem in there, the only thing the legislature couldn't do, right, is without effectively recreating the authority is authorize something to issue non-state bonds, right? I mean, they could create an agency and give it authority to issue bonds, right?
If revenue bonds, it would
revenue
be state
bonds.
Bonds.
Right. That, but the difference is, the only difference is whether they'd be state bonds or not.
Well, that's
bonds.
Not the only difference. There's a significant difference in terms of there are practical differences in terms of whether the bonds get bought, as it were.
Sure.
And what supports them. And the other difference is, yes, the revolving fund, the legislature could and presumably would have to create some sort of new entity to hold the revolving funds. The legislature would also have to come up with a source of money.
Right.
In order to have those revolving funds receive the federal monies that they receive, yes. And, yeah, that could be done. The question is, isn't it a different purpose to direct that has to be done in order for this to happen, or to direct that you're gonna completely change how things happen, and aren't the voters entitled to know about that? And I guess the final point is, Mr. Hamilton and Mr. Doe have indicated that they think that our discussions have been on the merits. It's pretty clear that their discussion is also focused on the merits here. But I guess the other point is, I think the Supreme Court has been very clear that one is entitled to examine the initiative to determine what its effects are in order to make the single subject analysis, and that is not addressing the merits. That is examining the initiative in order to comply with the single subject obligation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hammond. Mr. Hamilton, briefly.
This measure is proposed as legislative modification. Therefore, it has a turnaround time for change and redress of 2 years. This is not constitutional modification. This gives the public a full overview, full right to figure out whether revenue bonds, non-voted upon revenue bonds, or general obligation bonds should be the manner of taxation for water resource development. But at the time being, we have non-publicized revenue bonds worked through various kinds of governmental entities that impose taxes on people, and they don't know that the taxes are being imposed upon them. So what happens is, in all of this thing, besides the 2-year turnaround because it's initiated legislation, I'll go right back to the thing that the Supreme Court said. It said the court would not address the merits of a proposed measure, interpret it, or construe future legal effects. Now that's their words, those aren't mine. This measure is very simple. It's very simple. Very simple.
Thank you, Mr.
Ballot title set. Thank you for your time.
What Mr. Hamilton said with regard to taxation and with regard to people being taxed to pay bonds without knowing about it is not accurate. The authority issues revenue bonds. They are not paid by taxes. Now, some of the entities that in turn borrow money from the authority that is financed by revenue bonds, some of them, a very few, mostly they issue revenue bonds, but some of them issue general obligation bonds of their own, and they issue those general obligation bonds after a vote of the people. So it is not accurate in any way to state that the financing of the authority involves taxation of people that they are not aware of. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me turn to board discussion then with respect to the motion for rehearing. Any discussion by the board?
You want me to go first, or you want to go ahead?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. To start with, I think it's clear to me that, as was discussed for a little while, if the all of the authorities with a small a that were being done away with could have been created or given to an entity, could have been created at once under a single subject, it's quite clear that the entity could be done away with and all of its authorities done away with in a single measure. And this, I think, is close to that, but not quite. The question for a harder question, though, is whether an entity that couldn't have been created, an entity and all its authorities couldn't have been created or given to it all at once, could be abolished or deauthorized all at once. It seems to me that in the case, in most cases, I actually think that it could. For example, I think that, heaven forbid, the Attorney General could be abolished by a vote of the people, a constitutional vote. The office of the Attorney General could be abolished without violating a single subject prohibition, even though the Attorney General's authorities are pretty broad and reach into almost every aspect of the state's governing. A harder question than that would be if the people could both abolish the entity that controls it, abolish, say, the Attorney General, and prohibit the state from reenacting some of the powers as opposed to simply reassigning them. That would be a harder case, but that's not what we have here, although I think that is closer to the tax case. What was going on there was not only a tax cut and the logical implication of that, which is less money in the state's coffers, which generally means less spending. It was a specific directive that certain of that money couldn't be replaced in certain ways, I think. And here, if the proponents came in and said, we want to deauthorize the authority and we want to say you can't reassign these to any other state agency, those might, it seems to me, be two separate subjects, but that's not what we have here. It does seem to me that simply by being related to the same state agency is enough to satisfy the single subject requirement. That is, any state agency, I think, can simply be deauthorized or abolished. State subdivision or state authority can be abolished by a vote of the people without violating single subject. Even though I'm very sympathetic to the arguments about the messy effects that this will have, I would be less sure about that if they were also prohibiting the state from reassigning certain of the obligations that this particular entity has. But I'm comfortable that as it's written now, this is a single subject. And the arguments about the complicated and far-reaching implications are to me the type of things that have to be, that we don't get to address, that really are for the political process. And so I think it's a single subject, despite all the far-reaching implications it may have.
Thank you, Mr. Domenico. That helps me. I think what you said about the tax cut argument, I think, is very helpful, actually. Pointed out something I'd forgotten about the case.
Well, the Supreme Court is occasionally unhelpful and inconsistent, I have to admit. But I do think, to the extent I can explain both that case and the immigration case from last year, it's that there was one big... We're doing one big thing, and then there is also a related thing that was going on, but it wasn't a necessary implication. And so the Supreme Court said, well, this is sort of something that's not really necessary, and it might surprise people. Here, I think you have stuff that I agree, it would surprise people, perhaps, partly because they don't know what this authority does in the first place, but they would be surprised to learn of some of the implications of this. But they are necessary implications. I mean, the fact of the matter is something has to be done, and this doesn't really do anything surprising, even if it does something somewhat messy.
Well, and I did struggle with kind of the unique, well, I don't know that it's unique, but what's interesting about this measure, and every measure is interesting in its own way when we approach it from the single subject analysis point of view, but how, you know, again, what's unique about this one or unusual is how little it says versus how much it means. But I can't see a violation of single subject. An awful lot is left to implementing legislation, and an awful lot is left to the public debate that would ensue if it were on the ballot as far as the policy ramifications. But it seems like proponents have a single subject here. I don't see multiple purposes that are not connected with each other. So I think there's a single subject, and we haven't really focused on the title very much, but I think the titles do a pretty good job of describing, expressing the single subject and explaining features of the measure. I don't have nothing comes to mind as far as improving the titles based on the arguments and the discussion that we've had today. I guess I would support a motion, and I think the motion would be, if there's agreement, that the motion for rehearing be denied.
I'll move that the motion for rehearing be denied.
I'll second that. No other discussion. Then all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. So that concludes action on number 37. The time is 4:52 p.m. And that concludes our agenda, so we're adjourned. Thank you very much.